Hey, when you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about those out-of-pocket costs. Now, that can be a lot of money, but are your medical bills accurate? Now, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills actually contain errors. Now, HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, or fraud. Now, you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, to date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Check them out online, healthlock.com. Go there today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Glad you're with us. Wow, happy Friday. And write down our toll-free telephone number. We hope you'll join us today. A lot of news breaking all over the place, including, we're getting the sentencing recommendations for Cohn and for Manafort as the Russia investigation special counsel set to release the sentencing memo for Trump's lawyer by 5 o'clock, Michael Cohn. Does it really matter? We know that they think he cooperated dramatically. Why? Because he started singing or composing, whatever you may believe, but saying things very contrary to what he had said before, and obviously maybe things that the special counsel wanted to hear. And so it is, you know, the whole saga is sad to me. You know, the fact that this has now been reduced to signing up for saying you lied and committed perjury when you know you didn't, and the FBI didn't think you did, including the FBI director and deputy director, and even the Trump-hating Peter Strzok, who thought Hillary should win $100 million to $0. That's what they did in Michael Flynn's case. You know, because what happens, you get in these rooms with these prosecutors, and you're already broke because, you know, 33 years serving your country. How rich are you going to be when you work in the military? Because you feel God's calling to serve your country and 5 years in combat, and none of that seems to matter. And then you end up hiring lawyers because they're coming after you with a vengeance, and you end up then having to sell your house. And then they're saying, well, you know, your son worked with you in that business, and we'll offer you this plea deal. All right, let me dive on the sword for my son, which probably 99.9% of fathers would do. If anyone's going to get hit or take the hit, it's going to be the dad. And the next thing you know, it's Papadopoulos. I mean, 2 weeks in prison. We feel so safe, don't we, knowing that he's, you know, cloistered away from society for 2 weeks? In that case, he believes he was set up too. And then Jerome Corsi, describing in great detail, 40 appearances with the special counsel. And he's never, according to him, I'm only going by what he said to me and what Roger Stone, and I have no reason to doubt either one of them. Because if they're lying to me, they would have been caught by now and the information would have been out there. It's not that hard to figure this stuff out. But said he never met Assange, never communicated with Assange, never communicated with WikiLeaks, a representative of WikiLeaks, no contact at all. And, you know, we now know we have the emails that Roger Stone's email, it actually backed up his story when he said this. I don't know who this New York talk show host is. I don't even think I've ever heard the station the guy's on. But anyway, some talk show host apparently told him that WikiLeaks might have more whatever information coming out on Hillary Clinton. And Roger Stone is, you know, that's what he does. He does political campaigns. And if there's information on an opposition candidate and you can find it and you can get it, he's like, tell me about it. Let's get it. Okay, not knowing anything about where it came from. That's not a crime either by anybody. The only way it would be a crime if they were conspiring, and I assumed if they had evidence of this, these guys would have been long arrested, conspiring to steal information, then you get into big trouble. But even if he obtained stolen information but didn't know it was stolen, it's like the Pentagon Papers case where, you know, we had a Supreme Court ruling on that. So all of this, you know, all of this going on behind the scenes, and what have we got? We got taxi medallions with Michael Cohen. We've got, you know, tax return issues with Michael Cohen. We've got, let's see, Paul Manafort made mistakes on loan applications. I think Michael Cohen did that too. And, you know, we're learning a lot of lessons here. If you're going to file for a loan application, you better put everything in there that's truthful. My guess here is if people have financial difficulties of any kind, that they might, you know, artificially say that they have more money than they do. I'm just guessing. That would be my assumption. But if you have to be truthful in your loan application, otherwise, if you can't pay it back, then it would be probably viewed as some type of larceny, you know, or embezzlement or whatever you want to call it. We learn to pay our taxes on time, but we all knew that already. Always tell my guys, just pay it. That's what I say, just pay it. Just pay it. You know how many times those words come out of my mouth? Just whatever it is. And they're like, no, you're entitled to this legal deduction. I say, all right, we'll take all the legal deductions and then just whatever it is, pay it. If there's a question, just pay it. You know, err on the side of caution. Because it's just the way it is. If you're in the public eye, they'd love to say, he didn't pay his taxes. I pay more than my fair share. Trust me. And it just is, this is what it's come down. There's no collusion. The case of Manafort, we're talking about taxes and loans that go back as far as 2007. He worked for Trump maybe 100 days. The case of Cohen, one thing I can't figure out is, I know he gave testimony on one side and then apparently he's changed his position. That's fine, I guess, but which one should we, the public, or which one is the prosecutor going to choose to believe? I assume it's the one that is most damning to Donald Trump, because that's what this has always been about. And if they don't have a connection that either Jerome Corsi or Roger Stone ever conspired to steal emails or hack somebody, then them hearing through third parties that are not associated with WikiLeaks that they might have more information coming out that would be damning to Hillary Clinton. Remember, we all knew at some point, I don't remember the exact timeline of this, that Hillary Clinton's email in that mom and pop bathroom closet, and even the original draft of the Comey struck exoneration written in May before they interviewed her and 17 others, we knew that there was at least 5 or 6 foreign national intelligence services that had hacked into that computer. Remember the infamous line Trump had said, Russia, I hope you're listening. Maybe you've got them. Release them. Which I think was him being sarcastic, because she had violated the Espionage Act and she was getting away with it. Something that if he had ever done, God help us. Imagine if Donald Trump ever hired a foreign national that put together a dossier of Russian lies on Hillary Clinton and disseminated those lies to the American people so that he could win an election. What do you think the reaction would be? Because that's what she did. Or that Donald Trump ever had subpoenaed emails that he deleted, cleaned the hard drive with bleach bit, and busted up the devices that might still have those items on it. What would the reaction be then from the left? How does the media ignore all of this damning information? You know, now we're finding out that the dossier, which was the, as the Nunes and Grassley Graham memos told us, the bulk of the information presented to the FISA court within the FISA application process, that most of that information, the FBI and the intelligence community had serious questions with all of it, didn't believe it, and more importantly, never verified it, never corroborated it. And there's an email chain now that proves it. We didn't know about this for 2 years until this week, and John Solomon broke that story. They knew it was phony, but they used it anyway because that's how desperately they wanted to get into the Trump campaign. It's unbelievable. Imagine if this was in reverse. There's a really interesting story in The Hill today, how a federal judge has blasted both Hillary Clinton and the State Department for refusing to release thousands of emails to Judicial Watch. The judge in this case is named Royce Lamberth, called for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's use of private email server while in office, quote, one of the gravest modern offenses of government to government transparency. Now, again, here we are all these years later. We're still trying to get them. And Judge Lamberth sharply criticized both Clinton and lawyers for the State Department in a ruling granting Judicial Watch discovery in the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the state and justice departments. At best, quote, state's efforts to pass off its deficient search as legally adequate during settlement negotiations was negligence born out of incompetence. This is what the judge wrote. I mean, it's a damning takedown. At worst, career employees at the State Department and Justice Departments colluded to scuttle public scrutiny of Clinton, skirt the Freedom of Information Act, and hoodwink this court. That would be lying to the court. In his ruling, he then ordered the agencies to develop a plan with Judicial Watch for a discovery plan within 10 days that will determine whether Clinton used the server to evade Freedom of Information Act requests. He also ruled that the plan should determine whether State Department sought to settle the case with Judicial Watch, despite knowing the inadequacies of the initial search constituted bad faith on their part. Yikes. Now we have Trump's attorney general pick. This guy's name is Bill Barr, William Barr. One thing that he has repeatedly called for is a new Hillary investigation. Now, up to this point, I think Democrats and Republicans had great respect for him. Now, they're not going to, because the president kept the Senate, this is very important, his confirmation. Anyway, it looks like Barr is no fan of what are one-sided investigations that, like the one Rod Rosenstein and Mueller are a part of right now, where Trump associates get raked over the coals by Mueller, while one woman and her crime waves, like Hillary Clinton, and we're going to break a story about the Clinton Foundation in a minute here, get completely ignored. And if Barr acts on his previously expressed opinions, this could get interesting. Now, the Washington Post noted today that in November of 2017, Barr told the New York Times there was more basis to investigate Hillary Clinton for Uranium One than there is to investigate Trump for potential collusion with Russia, then went as far as to say that the Justice Department was wrong to give Clinton a pass. He's right on the law. How come so few people within the Justice Department see that? Now, remember, the Uranium One was unique. Happens to be that the FBI director at the time was Robert Mueller. What's unique about Uranium One is we had a guy, our own spy within Vladimir Putin's network in America. We knew why Putin's thugs were here, because they wanted a foothold in the uranium industry. And in our country, and they were had their operatives involved in bribery, blackmail, kickbacks, and money laundering. And all of this, a very brave guy by the name of William Campbell, was reporting all of it back to all these officials, and they did nothing, because not only did that deal get done, which is really stupid considering that is the foundational material for nuclear weapons that Putin really got from us, but then all the people involved with Rosatom and all these other agencies, Clinton's getting $500,000 for speeches in Russia and meeting with Putin, Bill Clinton, while his wife is the Secretary of State, and the Clinton Foundation coffers are being popped back with tens of millions of dollars in kickbacks. Anyway, to the extent, you know, Barr also explicitly called for more investigations of the Clinton, saying, I don't think all this stuff about throwing Clinton in jail or jumping to the conclusion that she should be prosecuted is appropriate, but added, but I do think there are things that should be investigated that have not been investigated. Yeah, like the email server. Yeah, like the phony Russian dossier. You know, it's stuff we have been calling for the longest time. And hopefully we're going to get a little closer to. The president announcing also Heather Nauert, who is a colleague over at Fox News, has been nominated to go to the United Nations, which I think is a great position for her. And she's always loved national security issues. She's, I think, number three or four now with Mike Pompeo over at the Department of State. Hey, listen, if you have heard me talk about my love of MyPillow and how it's changed my life and I fall asleep faster and I stay asleep longer, well, Mike Lindell, the owner of MyPillow, has really outdone himself. Because if you like the comfort of MyPillow and what it does for your neck and your back and helps you sleep, you're going to love the MyPillow mattress topper. Because that's like MyPillow for your entire body. That's like sleeping on a cloud every night of support. Three layers, as a matter of fact. The unique MyPillow foam for support, transitional foam to help relieve pressure points. Now, it has an ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover, 10-year warranty, washable, dryable, made in the U.S., backed by Mike's 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, the total support you need for the best sleep of your life. If you like MyPillow, you're going to love the MyPillow mattress topper. And if you go to MyPillow.com right now, use the promo code Hannity, you'll save 30%, and you'll also get two standard MyPillows free. Or you can call 800-919-6090 and just mention my name, MyPillow.com. Mention my name, Hannity. You get the MyPillow mattress topper, 30% off, and two MyPillow standard pillows free. We'll continue. One thing that is not political, it's smoking. That's about people. And there are 34 million Americans now that smoke. But for many, there's not been a clear alternative. Juul, for me, has been a game changer. I watch people all the time. They go outside in the middle of the freezing winter just to have their smoke. You don't have to do that anymore because of Juul. Now, people don't have to worry about the smell on your hands. Juul was specifically designed by smokers for smokers to be a satisfying alternative. It's a clean technology. Juul has no ash, no odor, no mess. If you're one of those 34 million adults who do smoke, you now know there's an alternative to cigarettes and cigars. Just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. That's JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. Now, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. But just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica.
You'll hear what everyone really thinks in D.C. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour. All right, so John Solomon, two big breaking news investigative reports this week. One on this newly discovered FBI email chain that I think provides the most damning evidence to date. The email exchanges include the former FBI director Comey, key investigators in the Russia probe, lawyers in the DOJ's National Security Division. And what we're discovering is pretty shocking, is that the FBI had, you know, understood and had problems with the credibility of the Steele dossier, which was the bulk of the application to get a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate. And they knew, but they just, what the heck, it's Donald Trump, we'll do it anyway. Well, that would be a violation of one's Fourth Amendment rights, unreasonable search and seizure. I will tell you, I'm going to predict here, Carter Page is going to be a wealthy man by the end of all of this. And I know I've asked him about it, and he said he wants to give a lot of it to charity. I'm not going to dissuade him from doing that, but he should for the price that he's paid. And remember, Carter Page, after a year's worth of being surveilled like this, how is it his name is never, never, ever mentioned as somebody that they even would consider indicting? And I'm, by the way, I'm not offering an idea here. I don't want the guy to get indicted. I'm just saying if he was so bad. And then when we've interviewed him, we learned a lot about Carter Page. Carter Page, that was a part of his job to often go to foreign countries, including countries that have hostile regimes like Russia and hostile leaders like Putin. And what was interesting to me is that when he came back from these trips, he willingly, regularly downloaded all the information that he had to our own intelligence services, CIA, I assume, National Security Agency, I assume, and other agencies that perhaps wanted some information. He was always willing to share because he said he loves his country. And I love that. I love how people are taking, by the way, my comments out of context this week when I said very, very clearly, remember, I grew up in a home full of law enforcement. My mom was a prison guard for 25 years. My dad, family court probation, city of New York. And, so, you know, the best gift I ever got was from my Uncle Billy Kerwin, who was a NYPD officer. He died way too young. He had Hodgkin's disease at the time. They didn't have a great cure rate like they do today. And he gave me a billy club, and he gave me a real cop's hat and handcuffs and a badge. And I was the happiest kid ever. I mean, I looked up and revered this guy. And his sister, Maureen, also became a police officer as well. And there were other members of my family. And then there were, on my mother's side, her dad's brother's kids made it to the FBI. It was, and they were like deity. They made the highest level ever. Remember, my grandparents came here from Ireland, all four of them, and none of them had a penny and faced, you know, Irish Catholic need not apply in cities like Boston and New York, and they had 10 bucks in their pocket and lived in poverty, just like my parents didn't grow up with hardly anything. And it was just, so it's hard when you hear about, you know, crooked cops, as Joe DeGeneva says, because most cops aren't crooked. Most FBI guys, not only are they not crooked, they're the best of the best. And we count on them and rely on them for so much. And the work that they do is at times so dangerous. And these guys do it and they serve and they're wonderful. That's why taking out of the field offices a lot of these investigations and letting the top brass within the upper echelon of the FBI or the DOJ to take over just reeks of political corruption, because that's not the way the things are done. And that was the first telltale sign that things were going way off course. But the fact that they knew and had questions about, and our own intelligence community had real grave concerns about the authenticity of Trump hating Christopher Steele's dirty dossier that Hillary bought and paid for before they ever used it in any FISA application is remarkable to me. And they did it anyway. You know, and Rod Rosenstein's infamous words, well, on FISA, let me see if I can capture his cadence. Well, you have to, we're talking about career law enforcement, and you're signing an affidavit that to the best of your knowledge, this is true, accurate. And if it's not, you know, there are severe consequences. Listen.
The way we operate in the Department of Justice, if we're going to accuse somebody of wrongdoing, we have to have admissible evidence and credible witnesses. We need to prepare to prove our case in court. And we have to affix our signature to the charging document. That's something that not everybody appreciates. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about FISA applications.
FISA, yeah.
And many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
Wrong, going to face consequences. The problem is they never believed it in the beginning, and they never verified and never corroborated. And now the smoking gun email chain exists. That would mean everyone that put their name, affidavit, on the FISA warrant, that they signed off on a fraud committed and perpetrated against the court, which we already knew there was enough evidence to glean all this, but now to have it in black and white in an email chain is one of the big four buckets. You know, when the president said, I'm just going to hold back on releasing the FISA application. I'm going to hold back. I'm going to hold back on releasing this fourth bucket, which is exactly what he's talking about here, this email chain, or the 302s, or the Gang of Eight information, probably strategically, not to my liking, because I'd like to see it now, and I don't exactly have the patience to wait and wait and wait, because it's taken too long, and we've been on this for 2 years, but it probably is appropriate knowing what's coming with the Democrats and their endless investigations, because it's going to reveal an awful lot about an awful lot of people. And so we'll see. Now, there is a Daily Caller report, and we're not exactly sure when Mueller, and we expect he's going to put his sentencing recommendations out now on Manafort and Cohn, which we've been talking about, like he did against General Flynn. But we're not sure exactly when Mueller is going to issue his final Russiagate report. If I had to guess, it's going to be after the holidays. What's today, December the 7th? That would be my best guess. I would assume they're going to make another run at trying to get the president to either talk to them or answer more questions. I can't see that there's going to be a real urgency in the White House to do that. But there's going to be a Giuliani report to rebut a lot of this. And I'll bet a lot of the information that we have discovered in the last year and a half will be present in that rebuttal. And I bet this new report of John Solomon will also, this email chain at some point is going to be released, just like those 302s and those FISA applications. And if the FBI used as the bulk of information, as suggested by Nunes and Grassley and Graham in their memos, that they used something they never verified and that they spied illegally on a opposition party candidate using opposition party research and withheld that from the courts, we've identified, Greg Jarrett's identified, 8 felonies now that they would be potentially liable for having committed. So we're not sure when these reports, the president tweeted earlier today that 87 pages of the report were already prepared for rebuttal by Rudy Giuliani, and Mueller's report is expected in coming months. And after a 2-year long probe of nothing, and Giuliani told the Daily Beast in August that the counter report preparation was underway and would consist of 2 sections. So we'll see what happens there. Trump's attorney general pick, just to go back to him for a second here, William Barr, has called for a brand new investigation into the Hillary Clinton crime wave. He's no fan also of Robert Mueller. Barr has not shied away from sharing those opinions about several key issues as it relates to the Mueller probe. Penned an op-ed in the Washington Post, May of 2017, defending Trump's move just days earlier to fire former FBI Director Comey. By the way, the president could have fired him for any reason. It's indisputable. Doesn't matter why he fired him. He has a right to do that. Even Comey acknowledged that. And Barr also weighed in on the president's steady criticism of the Mueller team because several prosecutors donated money to the Democrats. And he said, rightly so, in my view, prosecutors who make political contributions are identifying fairly strongly with a political party. Remember, the pit bull, Andrew Weissman, was hanging out, waiting for Hillary's victory at the Javits Center and the fireworks that were taken away a few days before. I would have liked to have seen him have more balance on this group. November 2017, Barr downplayed the criticism that Trump was crossing a line when he called for a new special counsel appointment to examine potential wrongdoing at the Clinton Foundation tied to suggestions that a U.S. government panel approved the sale of large uranium firm to Russia and that they got money kickbacks, which we know did in fact take place. There's nothing inherently wrong about a president calling for an investigation. Matter of fact, the president can order one if you want to get into the pure power of the presidency and the executive branch, and said so at the time. And the Uranium One deal, that's all stuff that has happened. And speaking of the Clinton Foundation, Catherine Herridge reporting today that three people now have come forward with hundreds of pages of evidence of potential wrongdoing, building on John Solomon's piece at the Clinton Foundation, including misappropriation of funds, allegations of quid pro quo promises made to donors during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. Mark Meadows now going on the record. Meadows, chairman of the House Oversight Subcommittee of Government Operations. That panel is holding an investigative hearing next week on the status of the foundation case. You know, one has to ask where U.S. Attorney John Huber is, who was tasked to investigate the foundation last year by Jeff Sessions. And that foundation consistently has maintained that it's a charity and never traded on Hillary's position. But The Hill reported on Thursday prosecutors working for Uber recently requested documents from a private investigative firm that also has been looking into the foundation. And I just told you about John Solomon's piece, which he will explain in the next hour. I don't want to get on that. But, you know, Mueller gave Obama officials a pass on felony leak of, for example, General Flynn. Kimberly Strassel, I thought, made a point that nobody else is making today in The Wall Street Journal. Because Mueller's approaching his endgame. And the press is alive with their speculation as to how bad Mueller's report will be for Trump. And it is worth noticing, though, how good Mueller has been to another president. And that would be Barack Obama and his team. You know, why the benevolence in their direction? Because it was on display when the sentencing document, and we're getting two more today, you know, the special counsel's office filed on Tuesday for Michael Flynn, because the former Trump national security advisor, we are told, had provided substantial assistance, 19 interviews, aided in several ongoing investigations. They recommend, you know, sparing him any prison time. But what about the potential crimes that put Mr. Flynn in Mueller's crosshairs to begin with? None of this would have happened. I thought I was the only one else talking about this, and Kimberly laid it out really well on this piece. And that is, the Obama White House only learned about Flynn's conversations with his soon-to-be Russian counterpart because the U.S. monitors phone calls of foreign officials. But under law, they're supposed to use a process called minimization. And that is, if they recognize that one is an American, if any American is caught up in their eavesdropping, if it's an American, you got to get a warrant to eavesdrop on an American. We have Fourth Amendment protections. Anyway, 10 days later, someone in the administration leaked to the Washington Post that the conversation Mr. Flynn had with his soon-to-be counterpart. But they're forgetting that Devin Nunes has called the leak the most destructive to national security that he had seen in Washington, disclosing classified information as a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. And the Post has bragged that its story was sourced by 9 separate officials. Oh, is that okay now? We want our government to do this? By the way, apparently McCabe launched a Trump obstruction investigation before Mueller was ever appointed. This just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And where it ends, I can't even begin to guess at this point. Hey, we're all on the Sean Hannity Show, proud members of the DollarShaveClub.com/Hannity. Look, everything you need to look, feel, smell your greatest. And what I love the best about the DollarShaveClub.com/Hannity, I don't ever have to go to a store. I don't have to beg somebody to open up the razor box where it's all locked up. Find somebody. Can you please unlock? I need a new razor. Blah, blah, blah. Nope. Dollar Shave Club, you get a far superior razor, the best you've ever used. It's called the Executive Blade. 6 blades, and it's literally a third of the price. And they'll deliver it right to your home. But Dollar Shave Club, everything you need to get ready, no matter what you're getting ready for, they got you covered head to toe. Your hair, your skin, your face, you name it, they have it. And they have a program. You can be on automatic delivery based on how much you want or need. You don't pay to be a member of the club. You only pay for the products you use. They have their starter kits, like their oral care kit, if you want to try it. Great toothpaste, by the way. And they also have the Dollar Shave Club Shavers Kit. You can try it for $5. You like it, you just buy more. If you don't like it, you don't have to buy anything ever. You don't pay to be a member. You get better, superior products, a third of the price, delivered to your house. Just go to DollarShaveClub.com/Hannity. DollarShaveClub.com/Hannity. Quick break. Right back. Glad you're with us. 3 hours a day, every day. It's all we ask. We'll continue. right, it looks like there's a possibility that General Kelly might be retiring. And now we have a new AG picked by the president, Heather Nauert at UN by the president. So the rumor is Nick Ayers, and Nick Ayers, I guess he was, Pence's chief of staff. His name keeps coming up again and again, so we'll wait, watch. We're also awaiting the sentencing recommendations, Manafort, throw the book at him, Cohn, who knows. Does any of it have anything to do with Russia? Nope. Taxi medallions, loan applications, taxes, lying to Congress, that's about it. No Russia.
All right, Devin Nunes and, of course, Mark Meadows
talking about John Solomon, one of John Solomon's big breaking investigative reports this week. It's been a very busy week for him. Glad you're with us. Hour 2, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. What I was speaking with Devin Nunes there is just finally, almost 2 years in, what could be, in my view, the single most damning evidence to date of the abuse of power and corruption within the FBI and the upper ranks of the FBI and the upper ranks of the DOJ, not rank and file. I always, always, always make a distinction here, you know, but this is important. In other words, there is an email chain that we now know exists. This is what Devin Nunes is referring to as the fourth bucket. Remember, they wanted certain things unredacted and released to the American people. They wanted the 302s, Bruce Orr, Christopher Steele. They wanted the Gang of Eight information released to the American people. They wanted the FISA warrant applications, the original application, and the three subsequent renewals, specifically the last renewal that was signed by Rod Rosenstein, and pages 10 through 12, 17 to 34, which I have not seen, but I'm told those are the pages that would have key information in it. But imagine what this email chain now shows us and makes us aware of is that the FBI knew way before they secured and put in an application for a FISA warrant on Carter Page that there were massive concerns about the integrity of the information, by the way, now pretty much debunked, that they were going to use to obtain the FISA warrant. Now, remember, our investigation, Inspector General, the Senate Intel Committee, the House Intel Committee, the Nunes memo, the Grassley-Graham memo, that the bulk of the information to obtain the FISA warrants was the Clinton bought and paid for with funneled money dossier using a foreign agent, Christopher Steele, and his Russian contacts. And what we're now learning is, because as a matter of law and protocol and everything in between, they're supposed to verify and corroborate such information before they present it to the court. We also know that they withheld pertinent information to the court. The fact that Hillary had bought and paid for this information, the fact that it was unverified and uncorroborated, but they knew that it was tainted and likely even not true. That was his first big story of the week. Any updates there? Because what you're talking about is every person that signed off on those FISA applications would be responsible for perpetrating a fraud based on the way Rod Rosenstein describes what the process would mean, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt, Sean. We are looking at a Perry. Now, this case began with a conspiracy, right? The question was there a conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia? And I think it will end with an entirely different conspiracy, a conspiracy by the Justice Department and the FBI to selectively provide facts to a court and hide exculpatory evidence. And I think you heard Devin Nunes say it on the show last night. You've heard Mark Meadows say it. You've heard Senator Grassley say it. Even Paul Ryan, who was not necessarily that interested in this these issues at the beginning, now says that he believes there were FISA abuses. This case, will, when we are all done, will flip on its head. And instead of the core allegations that it all started with, the investigators are going to be the investigated. And today we see some of that going on behind closed doors with
James
former
Comey.
Director of FBI, yeah. James Comey. He's on that email chain. I don't know where in the email chain he is, but he's on that chain. And he's one of those guys that even though he let his bureau submit the Steele dossier to the court as evidence, he's the guy that's been out there most frequently saying it was unverified. He apparently didn't understand when he submitted the FISA, you're not supposed to use unverified information for a FISA, but his own words called it unverified, and the question that they need to ask him today is, if it was unverified, why did you allow your bureau to use it? And I think we're going to get some very interesting answers out of the Comey interrogation today.
I think it's going to be very interesting. I wonder if there'll be any leaks in there because he's behind closed doors. He was desperately afraid of that. But I do think, I hope he has good lawyers in there with him because I think he's probably in a heap of trouble because that would be a conscious fraud perpetrated on the court and violating someone's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure. I won't renew what I had played earlier this week, and that's Rod Rosenstein. When you get a FISA warrant, I mean, that you have to sign an affidavit as a law enforcement official that, to the best of your knowledge, this is true and accurate and, you know, blah, blah. And there are severe consequences if it's not. All right, let me go to breaking news story two of John Solomon. Sure. And this is, you know, we've all been wondering, how do the Clintons always get away with it? Did they get away with the Espionage Act violation, the server in the mom and pop shop bathroom closet? That gets fixed for them. They get away with subpoenaed emails erased, hard drives washed clean with bleach bit, devices busted up. I won't even go back to the Clinton years and all the different controversies there. Let's just start with Hillary Clinton. Then we know the Uranium One deal, multiple millions of dollars kicked back to the Clinton Foundation from the very people involved in the Uranium One deal, our FBI, we had a spy, William Campbell, inside Putin's network in the United States. Putin wanted a foothold in our uranium industry, and they were involved in bribery, blackmail, extortion, money laundering, and our spy was telling our FBI everything that was going on every step of the way. They still got that deal done. Hillary was one of nine people to sign off on the deal, and a lot of money from the people involved in the deal ended up in the foundation. The Clinton Foundation. Now, the Clinton Foundation itself is under, well, let's say, scrutiny like never before. Why don't you walk us through what you discovered?
Yeah, this is really interesting. So there's a group of former federal investigators, people who brought down the cartels for the DEA, people who prosecuted major crimes in the financial sector in Connecticut and New York. And they spent a year of their own time and money, and they put together a body of evidence, and they submitted what is known as a whistleblower submission to the IRS and to the FBI last year. It started at the IRS, and it's interesting. They sent it to the IRS in August of 17. By October of 17, Maine Justice Department called them, asked them for a presentation, and then in January of 2018, the FBI in Little Rock, the field office that would handle a criminal case against the Clinton Foundation, because that's where it's based, interviewed these guys. And it's a 48-page complaint supported by 6,000 internal documents of the Clinton Foundation. And it lays out the most compelling case to date that's ever been made publicly of why there was criminality and illegality going on inside the Clinton Foundation. And guess what their evidence is? It isn't these guys. It isn't Republicans. It is internal documents that the Clinton Foundation produced itself that flag legal issues. And these are some of the quotes from the legal reviews that the Clinton Foundation did on itself. We've never seen these, right? Here's one of them. There were quid pro quo expectations created for donors that if they gave money to the foundation, they would get something from Secretary Clinton or President Clinton's government connections. Quid pro quos, as you know, are illegal. There is a culture of noncompliance with the law and with IRS regulations. That's the law firm for the Clinton Foundation's making these private determinations. There is improper commingling of personal business and foundation business, and it's to the detriment of the foundation. Interpreted in layman's terms, expenses for personal business endeavors of the Clintons or other people involved in the foundation were being picked up by the tax-exempt donations of the foundation. And I can go on. Travel abuse, travel fraud is cited in there. Some of the misconduct going on inside the foundation so disturbed its own workers, the foundation's own workers. In 2011, they were asking for whistleblower protections. Think about that. A charitable foundation whose employees feel like they need to be given whistleblower protections because they were asked to sanction improper behavior. All of this was dug up by these investigators. All of it was given to the IRS, to the FBI, and to the Justice Department. And next week, the big question is going to be, Mr. Government, what have you done with it? FBI, DOJ, IRS, what have you done with this compilation of evidence, and are you investigating? And Mark Meadows, whose clip you paid just a few seconds ago, is going to have a hearing. The first panel, my understanding, is going to be these whistleblowers laying out their case. The second is going to be somebody who's an expert that made cases like this, and they're going to ask him, could you make a case from this? And then the third one is supposed to be the Justice Department, someone representing Rod Rosenstein or John Huber or the FBI saying, what have you done to investigate these serious allegations? And I think it's going to be quite a day. We may get our very first answer as a very first public confirmation that there is an ongoing investigation of the Clinton Foundation.
Well, what was there was talk a while back. Well, I had heard at one point there was a grand jury that had been seated in Little Rock on this very issue. You're describing here is 6,000 pages of evidence attached to a whistleblower submission filed secretly more than a year ago with the IRS and the FBI, a 48-page submission dated August 11, 2017, supported by 95 exhibits and including internal legal reviews that the foundation conducted on itself, and that they flagged these serious allegations about legality, compliance, improper commingling of personal and charitable donations and business and quid pro quo promises, as you just mentioned. All right. If I did this, why do I think I'd be in real serious jeopardy of going to jail?
Sure. I think, listen, here's a great question. Look at the amount of intrigue and attention and curiosity the media has given to the allegations against Donald Trump, and then how much has been given to the Clinton Foundation. Take a look at the amount of resources spent to investigate Donald Trump on a claim that we now know was flawed from the beginning. And let's find out whether the same Justice Department, ironically, President Trump's own Justice Department, whether they spent the same fervor and money investigating what is equally serious accusation. Listen, until proven, right, they're just accusations. But this evidence is fairly important. And one of the things I didn't mention, the first thing, these investigators, these private investigators who made the whistleblower submission, they actually took the current CFO, the chief financial officer of the foundation, out for lunch right after President Trump was elected in November 2016. And according to their report of their interview, he made several spontaneous admissions of wrongdoing at the foundation. Now, he denies he was.
All right, hold on to that thought, only because I have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue. Two big breaking stories. John Solomon also will be joining us tonight on Hannity to delve deeper into both these issues, 9 Eastern. These are huge issues. I mean, this is now, I think, the most damning evidence as it relates to knowledge that the dossier was phony. They used it anyway to obtain a warrant by committing obvious fraud and perpetrating lies on a court on a magnitude we've never seen before. And the Clinton Foundation commingling of dollars is a big issue. We'll continue more with John Solomon. And later on, Camille Pally is going to join us today. We'll get her brilliant insights. She's always fun and much more straight ahead.
Working every day to remember the forgotten man.
This is the Sean Hannity Show.
This president that we have now is trying to unravel everything that he did and Obama did. And if I ever become a one-issue voter, it will be about pollution and the greenhouse effect. And
can
the
we
fact
focus
that,
on the president, please? I don't want to talk about Trump. We're honoring a great president.
Excuse me a second, please. I want to talk about.
But I'm not interested in your one issue.
I don't care what you're interested in. I'm talking.
Well, I don't care what you're interested in.
We'll
either,
be right back.
We'll be right back after that little fight. Apparently, according to some news reports, I think it was page 6. It got really nasty behind the scenes. They actually were at each other's throats with names that we can't even use on this show legally. So, yeah, we love Republicans as people on the left, just when they're dead. Camille Paglia is with us, back with us, provocateur, iconoclast, and one of the more interesting people I've ever had the chance over the years to interview. How are you?
Hi, Sean. As a Democrat, I'm embarrassed by the behavior of my party for the past few years since the election. For heaven's sakes, there was a duly elected president, and now it's incumbent on my party to clarify its agenda and find a strong candidate that can appeal from coast to coast. And there's all this endless, almost hallucinatory obsession with tearing the president down and thereby weakening the image of America in the world.
What is, in your view, I look at the Democratic agenda as almost singularly focused on destroying Donald Trump. We know where they stand. They want open borders. They want the crumbs back, the tax cuts that President Trump passed. And I don't hear any policies that I think would benefit the American people. Like I say, the forgotten men and women that are struggling and out of work, in poverty, on food stamps, et cetera. And I think I don't see an agenda that's going to be one that's going to help make the country better.
No, it's like a cloud of hysterical emotionalism that's coming from, I think, this complete isolation and detachment of the educated elite and the urban media in the United States. I'm speaking as a professor of media studies. The self-destruction of journalism itself over the past few years is going to have a terrible effect in the long run on our democracy.
When the president says fake news, or I say fake news, or because I think a lot of it is fake, my analysis, and I can't really watch a whole lot of it, but we do for pure, I guess, entertainment and political purposes, pick out. But it seems like it's every second, every minute, every hour, every day. It's hate Trump. And without any exceptions on some of the cable networks.
Well, and I've had to stop watching TV news completely.
Wait, Hannity's on at 9, Professor. Right. That's so not fair. What are you doing? What are you doing? I got to put food on the table, you know. You're killing me. What's that about? I thought we were friends.
Well, I used to watch the network news and CNN all the time, and now I tune in CNN for the hurricanes, and that's it, because it's absolutely unbearable. These people living in their bubble in Manhattan and Washington and Los Angeles. I teach in Philadelphia, but I live in the distant suburbs, and I try to observe actual social reality in the United States. All right, and I think that what's pouring out of the major media is absolute. What can I say? It's almost like the Spanish Inquisition. These people are twisted, truly mentally twisted people who are so focused, okay, on tearing down other people's beliefs, without presenting a coherent agenda of their own.
I really like conservatism, and I'm a conservative because I like the ideas that I believe, when implemented, work. Peace through strength works. Lower taxes, less burdensome regulation works. I can't really point to a left-wing policy that I can embrace and say, you know what, that's a great idea, that's going to help people, because all they've done is, frankly, created more dependency.
Yes, I voted for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries last time around, but I'm well aware, of the impracticality of the socialist proposals that are endorsed by particularly many of the younger now elected officials who appear to have no clear grasp on economics, and how, in fact, a nation's wealth is generated. So I think there's just a kind of a lack of practical understanding. There's too much adherence to buzzwords and compassion as a general flag, instead of the GOP, at least, has a sense of the way economies actually work in the modern world.
See, I don't think the GOP really has it. I think Trump has it. I think a few Republicans have it. I think real conservatives have it. But I have more contempt for the Republican Party that, frankly, has just become a watered-down version of the Democratic Party. And the thing that I hate the most in life is I don't see courage. I don't see these people fighting and taking a stand. And they say one thing on the campaign trail, and they do something entirely different when they get in a position of power. And that frustrates me. I think health care was a great case in point. Obama's president, 65 times Republicans vote to repeal and replace. Then when it mattered, they're nowhere to be found.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was one of the few Democrats criticizing Obamacare before it was ever passed, trying to warn the party, don't be going down that road. Essentially, Nancy Pelosi even pulled out, a plan that had been in the drawer, for years, and was saying things like, we'll find out what's in it once it's passed, and so on. I mean, all of the problems in Obamacare, I think, were very, very clear way down the road.
Look, the promises weren't kept. Keep your doctor, your plan, save money. Uh-huh. Millions lost their doctors and plans. Now they have only one option and nobody saved any money. What do you think of, what are your observations about Donald Trump? I'll tell you, one thing that I do like about him is the world feigns, you know, outrage at every word or tweet that he sends out there. I think it's selective and phony, and I think they're all pretending. I don't think we're a bunch of snowflakes that have not heard these words before or known people that are combative in our life before. I love that he fights, and when he's fighting for the American people, that's good. But what are your general thoughts about him, his presidency, and his enemies that want to remove him from office?
Well, he's a practical man of business who was brought in essentially from outside all of the party structures. So there has been a civil war going on inside the Republican Party as well as inside the Democratic Party for years now. And I think that he represents a wave. It's obvious. It's happened in Brazil. It's happening in Europe as well. Of the electorates are sick and tired of politics as usual and want someone to come in and deal with the problems themselves outside of ideology, okay? And that's essentially what he brings. That there's a kind of whatever chaos, the media are have been decrying in the Trump administration is coming from the fact that he was not a politician. He doesn't have a huge cadre of allies and supporters in the political establishment. So he's basically been feeling his way. I think the news media has failed spectacularly in its attacks on him since the election. Okay, the more they attack him, the more they're driving the country away from themselves and toward Trump. That's what I see. I mean, if the economy continues strong, I've been saying, it seems to me no doubt that Trump will be reelected. I hope to vote for a Democrat, but they have to give me a nominee I can vote for and not a corrupt Hillary.
You wrote a piece about how Hillary wants Trump to win again.
Yes.
Why do you say that? And who would be the person you would most be inclined to, or most interested in hearing more about at this time?
Well, you can see by her behavior, by this hogging of the spotlight, okay, that she's been doing, okay, that she's been essentially cutting out, the legs from all the Democratic candidates who would like to build up a national profile. I mean, I think her behavior toward fellow Democrats has been absolutely appalling and classless. I had high hopes for Kamala Harris, okay, but her behavior has certainly not been such, okay, in the last year or so that I would believe she could draw votes from the broad midsection of the country. So I've been looking at candidates, possible candidates, like for example, Governor Steve Bullock of Montana and also Congresswoman Sherry Bustos from Illinois. This is the kind of the kind of heartland manner, a warmth without the sarcasm and the sniping and the elitism that's so characteristic of an Elizabeth Warren, or of Kirsten Gillibrand. It's all over the map.
I find President Trump hilarious. Like, for example, I look at your writings and, a lot of times I'll laugh out loud. And I think I know you now well enough. I think that I know that you like to push people's buttons and make them think. I can only imagine what you're like in the classroom. I frankly would love to sit in on a lecture and watch that endeavor unfold, because I'm assuming you're teaching a bunch of snowflakes and there's shock and awe of their precious little value system getting challenged. I've got to imagine that's a pretty interesting experience.
Well, I teach at a practical vocational art school, okay? So right. I don't have as many snowflakes as are pouring into the elite schools.
Well, but still, there's a little shock and awe. The best teachers I had a really great professor at Adelphi University when I went there a year, and he was a sociology guy, and he's just out of his mind. Okay, if you want me to say communism's great and I'll get an A, okay, I understand the game. I can play that way, or I can just stand up to you and say you're an idiot and I can't stand your stupid book that you're making us buy, and I'm wasting my time in this class, and then you suffer and you get the appropriate grade of daring to challenge the views of the professor.
Right. Well, my voice and my views are available to the public, and my new book is Provocations, okay, which is a collection of essays on a huge variety of things, from Hollywood to politics to my longstanding proposal that religion, comparative religion, be made the core curriculum of undergraduate education. I mean, as I believe that only by understanding the great world religions of the through history can people realize really hoped for any kind of multicultural understanding of Earth today.
Yeah. All right. Camille Paglia is with us. Her new book is called Provocations, a 700-page essay collection, including, well, her best, her choiced satires of Hillary Clinton, all listed in the index. If you want to get a copy, we'll put it up on Hannity.com. I'll take a quick break. We'll come back right back. We'll get to your calls, final half hour of the program today. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program as we continue. Camille Paglia is with us, her latest book, Provocations. All right, is humanity losing its sense of humor? Because I see we're losing our... I mean, don't you... When people make fun of me, right, which they do, I love it. I think it's the greatest form of flattery. I have people that I know in the business that I work in, radio and TV. Somebody says one bad thing about them, or a Saturday Night Live mocks them, and they lose it. They bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer in water, and they can't handle it. Why is that?
Well, comedy was one of the great genres of, you know, of American culture. I mean, one of the cultural heroes of my college years was Lenny Bruce, okay, who had was arrested, you know, for repeatedly for pushing the limits of comedy, live comedy. I regard humor as health. Okay, people who are humorless or who are thin-skinned, hypersensitive to the offensiveness of comedy and so on, they have a mental problem. And right now, unfortunately, our universities have institutionalized this state of neurotic hypersensitiveness.
You know, I don't know if you watch comedy shows or these specials like on HBO or maybe some of the older comedians, like Richard Pryor was hilarious. I think Chris Rock is probably the most energetic, gifted storyteller, iconoclastic, tell it like it is comedian out there today. I've watched all these guys, and the more raw, the better for me. The more politically incorrect, the funnier they are. But there are a lot of comics that are afraid to go there because of where we are in society, and you can't say this and you can't offend that one or that one.
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah, the comedian depends on the sense of transgression. You have to have boundaries and you have to violate. I am a believer in free thought and free speech, okay? And that and comedy should always be unfettered. We're in a very, very puritanical period right now that it's very dangerous, okay, because it invades the mind, it intrudes on the mind, it holds emotions hostage.
Were you worried the way Judge Kavanaugh was treated?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely appalling, But the Democrats shot themselves in the foot. Okay, my good Lord. Okay, I mean, have you ever seen such a irrational? It was like the Salem witch trials. It really was.
All right, Camille Paglia, her book Provocation, 700-page essay, including her best work, is on Hannity.com, Amazon.com. Camille, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much.
Have a great vacation. I assume you're going on vacation, having a break.
All right. I never have a vacation, but happy holidays to you.
Okay, you too. Thank you. Hey, listen, sorry to spoil the surprise, but if you're going to get a gift from me this Christmas, everybody's getting blackriflecoffee.com/Sean gift certificates. I'll tell you why. It is the best, greatest coffee experience you'll ever have. I had a cup of coffee this morning, Black Rifle Coffee. I take a sip and it's like, the difference is so dramatic. You take one cup of coffee and your life changes forever. It's that good, depending on the strength, the flavor, the variety. Now, this is a company that hires first responders and American heroes, our vets. It was founded by them. They hire these guys and they donate to these great causes. And you get the best roast-to-order coffee you've ever had, guaranteed fresh, delicious coffee with every single order. You pick your favorite blend, whatever you want. Black Rifle will ship the coffee right to your door, and it makes a great gift this Christmas season. Great-tasting coffee, and they offer 3, 6, 12-month prepaid, pay-as-you-go subscriptions for people that you love in your life. Now, you're supporting a company created by vets, hiring first responders, and donating to vets, and the best coffee you've ever had. BlackRifleCoffee.com. BlackRifleCoffee.com/Sean. You get a 15% discount. BlackRifleCoffee.com/Sean, 15% discount. We'll take a quick break on this Friday. We'll come back. We'll continue. And when we do, we have Jonathan Gillum and Maria Elvira and much more straight ahead. All right, news roundup, information overload hour. By the way, we'll have more coverage of the Mueller sentencing filings as it relates to the Cohn and Manafort cases. And, of course, more on Comey's testimony as leaks come out of that meeting. Wonder what he had to say about, the sentencing of Lieutenant General Flynn, who never lied under oath. He didn't think so. McCabe didn't think so. Strzok didn't think so. But yet he was forced to plead guilty to that. And obviously the strong arm tactics of the Mueller team had to be responsible for all of that. We'll get back to that in a second. You just heard from the mayor of Tijuana speaking out against the caravan. Joining us, Jonathan Gillum, former Navy SEAL, federal air marshal, FBI agent, author of Sheep No More, Maria Elvira, Cuban-American journalist and broadcaster, and has worked, by the way, with Univision, Telemundo. Welcome both of you to the program. Maria, everybody had said in the beginning when this caravan started and we saw people on the southern border of Mexico breaking down fences and walking right past security and police and the military down in Mexico that this was a big problem. There's still thousands of people there. Some have now decided to turn around and go home because the president says you're not getting into the country. And the question is, why did Mexico allow it to be handled this way?
Well, because, and thank you for having me on your show, Mexico has a big problem right now, and it's the first time that they are really encountering what we have been suffering for many years, because this administration decided not to allow these people to get in. At the same time, Mexico now needs to understand, and I think that they're coming to the realization that they need to put a stop on their southern border. So Mexico, López Obrador, and President have the same problem, which is trying to determine what are they going to do with this wave of immigrants trying to either come into Mexico or into the United States. But I want to repeat, Mr. Hannity, exactly what I've been saying all along. We're going to have a caravan, and we're going to have many more caravans because people are desperate in Central America. That does not mean that we need to allow everybody in. We should only let people that have a legitimate claim for asylum, legitimate claim for asylum. If I have been raped 5 times by a gang in Honduras, that could be grounds for letting Lola.
But when you get to Mexico, why aren't people applying for asylum there? And I know that early on that the Mexican government even offered work permits for some of the migrant caravan members. And there were no takers of that. The goal was really to get to the United States, which I understand.
Absolutely.
But don't you think
they should stay? They should stay in Mexico. But
don't
they don't
you
want
think,
to because Mexico, tell me.
Yeah, well, Mexico, by the way, usually they have far more stricter and stringent policies on illegal immigrants than we do, but because they either put them in jail or send them right back, and there's no chance they ever get to stay anyway. So, you know, to get lectured by Mexico again and again on illegal immigration is a joke to me, but wouldn't a wall that was built that was impenetrable, wouldn't it be good for the safety and the security of people on all sides? In other words, if people in Central America, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, if they see that wall and they're not going to be able to get over that wall, they're not going to make the 1,000-plus-mile trek on foot to even attempt it. So they would then go through the proper process, wouldn't they?
Oh, I agree that the wall will stop thousands of them. But we have history cases that the walls, either in France or the Romans, the wall didn't stop everybody that wanted to come here. But I agree. But then I think it's not only the wall, Mr. Hannity. We need more solutions, the wall, or maybe a strict border security, more border patrol, more infrastructure and more infrared cameras, night vision cameras, more people. But at the same time, more visas for those that are coming in because our market is demanding that. Our labor market needs those people that are trying to come in. So you see, and then at the same time, see what type of legality we're going to give to those people that are here already. And then go talk to the Mexicans and the Nicaraguans and the Guatemalans and El Salvador and ask their people, their presidents, how can we keep your people home? In which way we can help you? So it's many pronged. And I'm sure that you agree. The wall, or high border security is just one of the topics that we need to talk about. It's comprehensive. It's a wide immigration. And this is the only president that has dared to come forth and say we need to put the house in order. That's why he's being branded as a racist. Because the other governments, the Clinton administration and the Obama administration, didn't dare to do. And because of the fear for international condemnation, because of the liberal press, because of the criticism. So, you see, but at the same time, it's not perfect we're doing. At least...
You know, look, Jonathan, we've had in the last week, we had the death of this young teacher in Texas by a violent felon that had committed crimes in America, was let out. We have one illegal immigrant deported 8 times before he murdered a co-worker of his. This is in the state of Washington. We learned just recently from the Washington Examiner that Obama had authorized $300 million taxpayer dollars to pay for free legal advice to illegal immigrants. The Census Bureau says 63% of non-citizens, are on some type of welfare. And there was a study that came out that showed that on average, an illegal immigrant is costing $70,000 a year per person in this country. And that includes the healthcare system, educational system, and the criminal justice system. That's an awful lot of money. And it seems like the wall in the end would be well worth the investment. We'd save money and we wouldn't have to worry so much about criminal elements if we were able to vet people.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And, you know, I really, really like what Elvira is saying about the comprehensive approach, because a lot of these, what Maria Elvira is saying, I love your name, by the way, and I know why she doesn't
work for CNN
mm-hmm. or for the other channel anymore either, because you make sense. I used to work for CNN as well for a little while, so mm-hmm. you make a lot of sense.
And You're right. The
comprehensive approach is what it's all about. Not just building a wall, but what about changing policy? Look at, for instance, Sean, when we look at the State Department and the policies that are entrenched in the State Department when it comes to people coming over from the Middle East. You know, you have places like Djibouti and places where people can't necessarily get to the country, so they go to other countries to integrate and try to come over here, and they don't have the ability to even run fingerprints in some of those places, or to run databases from the DOD to see if anybody has ever been involved in any type of a terrorist incident. We don't have the ability to do that because they won't share it, not because the technology doesn't exist. These are policy issues. And a lot of the times, those things aren't even checked until 10 years later after they get here. It's the same problem that you have with the southern border, is that for years, well, really up until now, no one has truly tried to fix the problem. And if you spent any time in Central South America, Sean, you spent time at the border. You pointed out all these things about the border. Well, what's interesting about Central South America is you go from the border down, and many of the countries are no different than where the border is. People are trying to move from one place to another. They're trying to, but they don't have the money to migrate. And that's another thing that's very odd about this, is how this group suddenly had money to move thousands and thousands of people, thousands of miles. That doesn't exist. They are that poor. But we have to have policies where if you're going to build a wall, why not build military bases down there by the wall and have exercises down there so we have a military presence? Yeah. Why not build in certain areas where there is where there's going to be a wall, where there's known people that come across? Why aren't we using trained law enforcement dogs in those areas? More for threat deterrent. You know, these are things that work at military bases, which if you try to sneak onto a military base, you're going to get caught, especially if you do it as a group of people. Why aren't we putting the same technology into that? We put military bases all over this country. Why not build them into the wall? And I think that in that area, we have mountains, we have deserts, we have swamp regions. Great training, great place for the military to be stationed so they can start doing this type of training. And that
Let me ask you, Maria. I think these are all good ideas. Maria, what happened to you when you worked at Univision, Telemundo, and fake news CNN?
Well, I worked before the Trump era. But I mm-hmm. tell you, I was working for Mega TV, which is a third regional network, U.S. Spanish network in the United States. And I can tell you, and I'm not sure, I don't know how this is going to sound, but this is the truth, that President Trump is not loved by Spanish television. That's the truth. I had serious problems with producers because they did not like the guy. And I kept on saying, it's not that I like him or not. I did not hire him to be my spiritual pastor. I hired him to solve the problem in the country. He's not always right, but when he is not, we have to be respectful. Because you know why? The sanctity of the American electoral system is sacred to us. You know why? Because my parents are political refugees from Cuba. And everybody, including Central America and Venezuela and Cuba and Argentina, would love to have the American electoral system. And that system happened to have chosen Mr. Trump. He won by the rules. Therefore, we need to respect him. There's no way that I believe that as journalists, we can be saying that he is this and he is that. I don't even want to repeat the words that we have heard on other networks. But big why? Because we have points of reference. Because first-generation Americans understand and we're generous and we love the country. We want to keep the system the way it is for the future of your children and my children. So that's why I had serious problems. And I'm telling you, Mr. Hannity, that we need to, and I'm sending this message to my friends in Spanish television. We need to stop this and start covering the news and not the man.
We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Maria Elvira is with us, broadcast journalist at work for CNN, Univision, Telemundo, Jonathan Gillum, who we all know very well. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue at the bottom of this half hour. We'll get right to the phones. 800-941-SHAWN is our number as we continue.
Draining the swamp. One corrupt politician at a time. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
As we continue with Jonathan Gillum and Maria Elvira, Cuban-American journalist, and she's worked for Univision, Telemundo, CNN. I want to just one last point that I'll let Jonathan respond to what we were just talking about. Do you believe you were targeted because you did not share a certain political belief that was dominant at these networks?
Well, I don't know if, and I'm sure you recall, I just finished running for district number 27 in Florida. Yeah.
I wanted you to win. Yeah. Yes. I was hoping you were going to win.
And thank you very much for that. And we almost did it. And I proved to everybody, including my party, that you could be a Hispanic, a conservative, a woman in a blue district and not denounce or criticize or insult the president and still come 2 points away from the president of the Clinton Foundation, who was my opponent, Mrs. Donna Shalala. She was not only the president of the Clinton Foundation, but she was also the longest serving member under the Clinton presidency.
Well, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to let you give up. The only mistake I could tell you that you made is we had tried, Linda, right? How many times did we try to get Maria on this program?
We just kept missing each other. We wanted to get her on when she was running.
We wanted to help your campaign. We were watching it very closely, and you did run a great race. You know, I just think, Jonathan, at the end of the day, and everything, unfortunately, gets broken down demographically, and I understand it. It's part of the way things get measured, but at the end of the day, we're all Americans here. And as Americans,
absolutely. And we are more Americans sometimes than you are. You know why? Because we love the system, because I repeat it. We have a point of reference. We know how bad it looks.
That's a good point. When you listen, we take for granted. I will concur. We take for granted the liberties and freedoms we have. Jonathan, we'll give you the last word.
You know, I grew up extremely poor in Arkansas, Sean. And the way this country is set up and what makes it so great is that I'm not still poor. I worked my way out of that. I did all these things, and I set my mind to becoming all these things, and I've done that. If I lived in Central South America, I'd still be poor. And why is that? because there is a stronghold of criminality amongst the politicians. And it's the same way. I know this sounds totally political, but the Democratic Party in this country is the same way. They look at you as this way, not that way, and they want you to stay that way. And that's why I think when we look at individuals like Maria and what she did standing up down there, we have to look at them as warriors and we have to stand behind them. And I keep saying that about conservatives in this country. You know, if we allow the globalists to continue, it's going to go downhill.
Yeah, this is a battle for the heart and soul of the future of the country. It's a tipping point, and that's what we're fighting for every day. Well, you know, what America do we want to leave to our kids and our grandkids? All right, thanks, Maria. We'll talk again. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. Listen, our friends at MyPillow have done it again. Mike Lindell, remember I've told you, I fall asleep faster. I stay asleep longer. It just works. It is the single most comfortable pillow you've ever laid your head on. Now they've taken it a step further. Now, we all have a mattress, but you don't have a MyPillow mattress topper. You put it on top of your mattress. And what happens is you get three-layer design support. You get MyPillow, the comfort foam for support, transitional foam to help relieve pressure points, and, of course, they have ultra-soft, a patented temperature-regulating cover. You put that on, it's like MyPillow from the head to toe. It just is like sleeping on a cloud every day. Has a 10-year warranty, washable, dryable, made in the U.S., backed by Mike Lindell's 60-day unconditional money guarantee. And you will love it. I love it. I can't imagine not having it anymore. Anyway, if you go to MyPillow.com right now, call 800-919-6090 right now. Mention my name, Hannity. You'll save 30% and Mike will give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. So you get the MyPillow mattress topper, 30% off. You get two standard MyPillows free. And all you have to do is go to MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity, or mention my name, 800-919-6090. Your calls are next.
Left-wing media bias. No stone left unturned. The Sean Hannity Show is back on the air.
All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Happy Friday. And yeah, we're going to take your calls for the half hour, but it's Friday. You've been working hard. You're headed home. You want a smile on your face. We have a brand new Friday concert series set up for you. Charlie Daniels, Zach Brown, and Big and Rich. Let's hit it.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, cause I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet and you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been."
"Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul."
"And a little bit of chicken fried, cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio, oh, oh, I like to see the sunrise, see the love in my woman's eyes, feel the touch of a precious child, and know a mother's love. It's funny how it's the little things in life that mean to come on and it blows me away. She's everything I want to say to a woman, but I couldn't find the words to say. She got one of them idiots, I don't know what to do. Cause every time I try to tell her how I feel, it comes out, I love you. You got whatever it is,
some good friends that live down the street. Got a good-looking woman with her arms around me. Here in a small town where it feels like home, I got everything I need and nothing that I don't. Your city, gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin yang, come along.
I don't want to put a little fun in your Friday, get you all set in the right mood for the weekend. All right, let's get to our busy phones as we say hi to Peter. Peter is in the great state of South Carolina. What's up, Peter? How are you? Where in South Carolina are you?
I'm in the Charleston area.
Have you ever been to Hall's Steakhouse in Charleston?
Which time?
You've been there a bunch then, huh?
Lobster macaroni, go for it.
Oh, man, it's even better than that. That was the best, one of the best steakhouses ever. Love the place.
And they greet you and they tell you goodbye.
No, they're the best. I actually got to meet the owners when I was there, and a lot of great people go, and what a great, fun place to hang out, too.
It's a great place to be. Really is. Anywhere in downtown Charleston is a great place to be.
Yeah, that's true. What's going on?
So judges signed warrants. If we now know that the FISA court was lied to, why haven't those judges signed warrants? And that goes right back to what Trump said, that Justice Roberts said there is no such thing as an Obama judge or so forth. That's proof there is. Those judges should be signing warrants for those people that lied.
Remember, it's Chief Justice Roberts that appointed these FISA court judges. I don't off the top of my head remember. I think there's 9, 10, 11, maybe. I don't remember the number, but 12. There's a number of FISA court judges, but they're appointed by the Chief Justice. And
right?
Listen, I can tell you with a certainty. And I know Judge Judy, so I met her a couple of times. She is such a nice lady. You have no idea. She's fun. She's so dynamic. What a personality. And I've gotten to spend time with her. But I will say this. No judge is going to take being lied to. No judge is going to. Judges now knowing that they knew what was presented in those FISA applications being false, knowingly false, and that those people that signed off were signing off and verifying the accuracy and authenticity of this, and they never verified it, and withholding certain information.
That's right. So to go along with that, too, on the whole Kavanaugh thing, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Flynn, who's being railroaded and losing everything. Are we going to make him whole again because we're prosecuting him?
But the only way that happens is if he gets a pardon at some point. It doesn't look like he's getting jail time. By the way, it's 11 FISA judges. Our good friend Linda is really fast on Google. So it's 11. I was close. But his life. But think about this. And by the way, thank you for the call. Tell everybody at Halls next time you're there I said hello. It's this is your whole life now. It's been a year of hell. Well, actually, 2 years of hell, if you really want to know the truth, for Lieutenant General Flynn. And when you get to the point, having served 33 years, serving your country, 5 years in combat, and you now have to pay these attorneys, it's not like he was being paid, you know, massive amounts of money serving his country. But he did have enough money to buy a house. Now that house, that retirement money's gone for him. And he had to sell it to pay his lawyers. Lawyers are expensive as hell. And he had to do it, and which is probably, then they wanted to go after his kids, so now he has to end it by admitting to something that nobody thought he did. That's not justice in America. That can't be our justice system. Now, I understand that cooperation agreements are important, but there's also something known as prosecutorial discretion. And I just think that for whatever reason, and this is why I never liked this team that Mueller put together, you have these overly ambitious prosecutors that are like gunslingers. They have lost any sense or touch with what they do to the lives of individuals. And the benefit of the doubt is hardly ever afforded to them, because then it becomes a competition for them. And it becomes about winning, and they don't want to lose. And they're not going to let this expensive defense attorney beat me. And, you know, and how about we just do the right thing? put some context and texture into these issues. And, you know, if the FBI didn't think he lied, why would you go any further than that? That's sad. You know, I saw the media saying, well, Hannity says, don't talk to the FBI. I said, it saddens me. I grew up revering the FBI. And what I'm watching here and what we're learning from all of this is if the FBI comes calling and God forbid you get something wrong, doesn't mean Flynn's case, it's even worse because it was illegally surveilled, unmasked, and raw intelligence leaked. And they had his entire transcript. It was a setup. This is the biggest perjury trap that ever existed. And he doesn't get some of the facts clear, right, correct. They're going to look, these are all process crimes. All these people being charged with lying to the FBI. James Corsi, Jerome Corsi saying, whoa, I'm not going to lie to my God under oath to something I didn't do. Did I misremember things? Did I get facts wrong? Yeah, I'm 72 years old. I didn't remember emails from 2016. I'm sorry. They're not giving anybody the benefit of the doubt. And then I went through the whole list of other people from Clapper to Brennan to Holder to Loretta Lynch to Cheryl Mills and Uma Abedin and, you know, Hillary Clinton, and the list goes on and on. They're all lying, and none of them get touched. And that's where the issue of equal justice under the law and application of our laws matters. All right, let's get back to our phones as we say hi to Nathan is in Utah. Nathan, hi, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hi, Sean, how's it going?
I'm good, sir. What's happening?
Nothing much. Can I just start off by, like, thanking you for putting the truth out on the airwaves? Like, you're a brave man for doing this.
Well, brave, dumb, stupid. I don't know. Listen, it's an honor to be here. I've never forgotten my whole life. I got a pretty nice honor this week from Mediaite.com as the number one most influential television anchor in the country. And I'm sure some of my fellow colleagues, Linda, you know that they hate that, right? You have made this show for 2 years in a row, the number one show, Hannity, on cable news. And we now have hit our 600 affiliate in radio. And, you know, you make this happen. I never forget it. I understand that this is a gift and I have to earn it every day. I really do. So thank you. It's easy for me to talk and tell the truth. That's what I would love to do. And that's what I love to do every day.
Well, I can honestly tell you, you've changed my mind, because I was one of those spoiled kids.
Yeah.
I was one of those spoiled kids. Like, I used to be a Democrat. I used to be a liberal. Mm-hmm. And at the age that I am right now with my three children, I've seen the nonsense in it.
How old are you now?
I'm 34.
Okay. And so how liberal were you and how long ago was it?
I was a big Barack Obama fan during the first term. His second term, not so much. And during his second term, that's when I started seeing the nonsense off in it. And I started seeing how, like, the younger people younger than me with the entitlement issues about how they shouldn't have to work and everything should be given to them for free. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And once they get out into the world and they have to do things for themselves, they're going to see the ridiculousness in it. You know what I mean?
Isn't it an amazing life lesson when a kid goes out and gets his first paycheck and then sees, well, wait a minute, I get paid this much, but I only got that much. How much? And then they start looking at their pay stub, and although I guess direct deposit probably takes care of all of that. I would love to. If you want to see tax laws change in this country, Nathan, get rid of withholding. In other words, let them pay you your entire check, and it's your responsibility to figure out what you owe the federal government, your state government, your city government, your property tax people. You know what? And if people have to write a check for that every week or every month, let me tell you what's going to happen. It's going to piss a lot of people off. You know, you ask people, what do they get paid? They'll give you the number, the net that they take home, not the gross, which they really made. And unfortunately, you know, we just... Look what happened to Macron. I'm telling you that they only can push people so far. And, you know, $7 a gallon for gasoline in, you know, his popularity was soaring. I think he's now down to 18%, and he pulled the tax back. Government is putting a stranglehold on people's lives. You know, we're now energy independent as a country. You know why? Because Donald Trump got rid of these insane, arcane, burdensome regulations that prevented us from doing that. And that means the lifeblood of our economy is right here, and we just have to take it out ourselves. And the other part of that is we have hundreds of thousands of jobs created, ironically, more revenues to the federal government. And the money that people make, then that they're buying cars and they're building houses and they're renovating houses and they're going out to dinner and they go to Disney and, you know, they take vacations and everybody benefits. Everybody, let me tell you one thing. Everybody in America, I think, can be well off. I really believe that. It depending on what you want to do, people can always be successful right now in this country, today, regardless of government. All right, listen, God bless you and your family. I'm behind. I appreciate your call. I'm glad you changed your mind. I'm glad if I played a little part. Thank you. Listen, you know what it's like in the holidays? You can actually be with your whole extended family, and you just all ate a big meal, and you're like sitting around. Everyone's a little lazy, dozing off, and you're all on your own electronics, iPad, a laptop, a BlackBerry, an iPhone, and it's just you even text each other, and you're right next to each other. It's ridiculous. Listen to Uncle Snow-and-so snore. You know, whatever it is. Well, if you have Wits and Wagers, and it's on sale at Target right now, you pull out this game, everyone in the family can play, from the youngest to oldest, and everyone in between, and it asks crazy questions. Somebody pulls out the game, you start playing, and then everyone hears the laughter, and everyone starts getting interested, and they slowly put their phones down, and their computers down, and their iPads down, and they start participating. And there's no electronics. And you're interacting with each other. And you don't even, you're laughing with each other. And you're having a good time with each other. And the next thing you know, you've created a family fun memory that you can never get back. That's what Wits and Wagers does. It's an old-fashioned board party game. And it's fun for everybody of all ages. And right now it's on sale at Target. Just go to the toy section and ask for it. It's Wits and Wagers. Wits and Wagers at Target.
Left wants to silence Hannity. Don't let it happen. Make the commitment now. 3 hours every day at 3 p.m. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, Christmas is here, ladies and gentlemen, but sagging jawline, double chins, they don't have to be a part of your celebration this year. Chamonix has done it again. First, they came out with Genucel to get rid of bags and puffiness under your eyes, then Genucel, the sunspot corrector, and now it's Genucel's jawline treatment with dual peptide MDL technology. It is their most advanced technology ever. It not only tightens a saggy jawline, but it also plumps the lipophilic layers of your skin, so that means they contour and define your jawline within minutes using peptides and metallactones together for the first time. It's amazing, it works, and it's guaranteed to work. And for the next 2 weeks, the Genucel jawline treatment is yours absolutely free when you order Genucel to get rid of bags and puffiness under your eyes. And for 12 hours, by the way, you're going to see results that you never dreamed of. Just go to Genucel.com, call the toll-free number, it's 800-SKIN-509, and you can end the year on a high note with the most beautiful skin, no bags, no puffiness, and a tighter, higher jawline.
And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, that Chamonix gives a portion of the proceeds of everything you buy to Women Aware, which is a great organization. I actually visited it myself, and it helps women in need. So always keep that in mind when you're buying your Christmas gifts from Chamonix.
All right, 800-SKIN-509, Genucel.com, and it's a great gift for those people you love. Genucel.com, 800-SKIN-509. All right, Hannity, tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. All right, so sentencing recommendations as it relates to Cohen and Manafort, no big surprises. The interview that took place earlier today as it relates to, yes, James Comey, what did they get out of that, and the Clinton Foundation issue heating up. We got full coverage, 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.